Number two is attention and focus. So I do like the original wording in the executive function materials talking about attention, but I'm going to add focus to it because where attention goes, focus flows. What you focus on longest becomes strongest. Attention, if you haven't figured it out yet, is a currency. And as it's been said by others, attention is the currency of leadership. And so it's the way you pay people. It's the way you move things forward. And so when I talk about number two, I'm talking about the capacity to give your attention, to give your focus. And I'll just make a short list here on the priorities, the people, and the task that are most important. And then by definition, you're filtering out everything else. Yeah, it's the ability to focus on priorities, people, and task that are most important. And you could argue people first, or you could argue with my prioritization, I guess. But priorities, people, and task that are most important while filtering out everything else. So if you buy into that I am called at this time, in this place, for this season, to focus on these priorities, these people, these tasks, then by definition, everything else is a distraction. Good, great, bad, if it's not tied to these things. So that's why in the last one, I was trying to balance between impulse control so that you're not saying yes to, or you're not getting involved in, or you're not responding even no to something that is tied to a key priority, a key person, a key task, and you're giving your attention and your focus right where it should be. So you've got to decide what that is. I mean, we think of the verse from Philippians. Paul says, but one thing I do, not many, not 1,000. I can't seem to get it down to one. Maybe I'm not where he is in life, but his one thing is forgetting what lies behind and struggling forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal, which I think we would understand for him is the goal of the gospel, moving the gospel forward. But then I think about, you know, Proverbs 4, verse 25, let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. And I think about that old illustration about the person plowing the field with an oxen. And if they keep their eyes downward and they try to walk a straight path and they get to the end of the field and they look back, they've weaved and wobbled and gone in all sorts of ways. But if they find a fixed point in the distance, almost as if you fix your eyes on something. I wonder what that would be. You fix your eyes on something. If they fix their eyes on that spot in the distance and plow toward that, and then they look back, it's almost a straight path. So what is getting your attention? What is getting your focus? Ephesians 5, Paul tells us, look carefully then how you walk. Not as unwise, that's a little bit of that first one, but as wise, making the best use of your time, because the days are evil. Some of you have been around coaching long enough that you remember when I used to give out the post-it notes and there was a watermark on the post-it note, just kind of visible if you looked at it right, that said, what is the best use of my time right now? And this was the days before we had all of our phones and our little notes apps and all that. But you would grab that post-it note just to jot something down, like a little quick to-do list or a little plan of what you were going to do. And it was a prayer I would pray. Like, Lord, what's the best use of my time right now? Well, that's part of this focus. That's part of this attention. I draw a blank on the philosopher who said it. I think it was Pascal, but we'll check it out and fix it in the notes. He said, all of human problems can come down to this, the inability of man to sit quietly in a room for 1 hour. Who said that? Can anybody help me? I know I butchered the quote, but you know what I'm talking about, right? Pascal. Yeah, we're going to go with Pascal. Whenever in doubt, if it's a philosophy, quote Pascal or Kierkegaard, people don't know. They don't know. If it sounds formal, you can quote Churchill or Spurgeon. If it sounds American, you can quote JFK or somebody. Nobody will know. Anyway, you get the point. Pascal, it has been confirmed in the room that it is Pascal. So how are you doing with focus and attention? How long can you go without distraction? And remember, distraction is anything that's not tied to the current priorities, people, or tasks that you should be focused on. I don't want to get too personal, but if you're having a date night with your spouse, what person should you be focused on? So anything else is a distraction. You should be focused on your spouse. When you're at work, by definition, your focus should be at work. My old mentor, Zig Ziglar, used to tell the story about the person who was at work but was always thinking about things at home. And then when they were at home, they were always thinking about things at work. And so they were no good in either place, but then they were wearing themselves out with all the travel. So how do you work when you need to work? And then how do you be at home when you need to be at home? That's a good life principle. But then more importantly, when you have a goal in front of you, when you have something you're driving toward, how do you stay focused on just those things? So for example, your sermon prep. How long can you work without getting distracted when it comes to your sermon prep? Now, most of you know my strategy is my sermon prep is divided up over months. A lot of people still work week to week. I can't do that. I got to start working on it months out. And then I work in these focus blocks, sometimes for 2 or 3 days, working on an entire series at one time. That's a muscle that's been developed over time. In the early days of the church, I was working on it on Thursday night. For a while, I was so bad, I would preach it on Thursday night, send it to be transcribed in the Philippines so that I could get it back on Friday morning and then develop my manuscript. Full confession. That's not a great focus, not a great way to live. Other times, I was still backstage hoping that they'd sing one more verse of the song. I didn't know how to land this thing. But your muscles get stronger, your processes get developed. I mean, I'm happy to say, at least for the last decade, I've never preached a sermon publicly without having preached it privately and gotten feedback and help from other people. But the ability to focus. I used to tell people when I first started coaching 20 years ago or more, learn to work in 90-minute blocks of time. That's about the most the human mind can do, 90 minutes. But today, I think oftentimes when someone starts coaching with me, I just start with something a little easier. Like, can you just work in a 9-minute block of time without getting distracted? Because we have all these notifications. We have all these inputs coming into our lives. It's no longer just about the phone ringing or somebody popping into your office and saying, can I have a minute? It's the IMs that are popping up. It's the notifications on your phone. It's the little dings. It's this vibration noise of our phone that we can hear from 4 blocks away. Is that my phone vibrating? And some of you have phantom vibrations. It's happened just since we've been in here. You reach for your phone in your pocket. Is it vibrating? And the devil has just learned to use this to take away our attention, to take away our focus. And this muscle is weak in most of us. So it really has to be strengthened. And then you think about bigger things like giving time to strategic thinking. I mean, my current regular coaching networks are all about 90 minutes. Most of the time, they're not paying attention for the 90 minutes. And I have to personally build in breaks, breaks of laughter, breaks of little videos, bringing in a special guest, having them read something just to try to get their attention back. But even that is hard. And then what we're doing here, where I'm doing this teaching, and you know, to come together for 2 days. Yeah, it's hard to pull away for 2 days. I'm sure like me, last night after this, you had to go up to your room and you know catch up with your team and respond to a bunch of messages and handle different things. But then just to be in a room like this and be undivided. By the way, I'm not talking about those emergency situations. You know, I know some of you in these days have had some personal situations. Yeah, there's things happen. I mean, you know, it happens. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about when you can, when you should, when you're able. And how do you block out that time? There's a fear these days of being out of touch with your cell phone. Like not knowing where it is. But do you remember the days when we actually like turned the phone off? Are some of you old enough? Like older than 12? You know, like there was a time. I can actually remember where I was at when I made the transition between being at a speaking event, coming back to the hotel, talking to my wife, and then turning off my phone. Now, my hotel, even today in modern times, has a phone in it. My wife knows what hotel I'm staying at. Recent studies have found out that most parents don't even know the phone numbers of their children, by the way. That's a problem. But, you know, if they don't have their phone, they haven't memorized the numbers. So you might need that when you go to jail. I don't know if they'll let you. But anyway, we'll try that. Well, that's another talk for another day. But I still remember. I mean, it was in Southern California, and I was speaking at a conference, and I called my wife, and normally I would have turned off my cell phone for the night. We would have said our goodbyes. She would have declared that I'm the greatest husband in the world, given me dozens of kisses over the phone, said she's not going to be able to sleep till I get home, all that stuff that my wife says to me all the time. And then I said, okay, I'm turning off my phone. And I remember that specific night, I plugged it in and I just left it on. And other than those rare times where the battery drains or those rare times where like maybe they finally convinced me to turn it off because I'm about to go in the MRI machine or something, I don't think it's ever been off since. You know, I see it, I get, oh, it's down to 23%. I better plug it in. You know, I've got to keep it going. You know, we think it's got to be on. It's got to be there. I mean, how in the world did people survive in the old days? I mean, how did my parents ever raise a family? How did Spurgeon ever pastor a church? How did John Wesley ever travel all those miles? But these are weapons of mass destruction that just keep us from being able to focus. You know, the book I recommended yesterday, which I won't talk about now, but that author says that you ought to put your phone in a drawer in another room and then go in and have some thought time. You know, to do deep work, if you remember that. So I'm just talking about strengthening this muscle. And then here's one. How long can you spend in prayer without being distracted? Say, well, you should have started with that one. Well, I was building up, you know, I had to build it up. I sometimes ask myself, how long have I gone without thinking about God? And then I'm embarrassed by that. I mean, my number one focus, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And I mentioned earlier, you know, when these things happen and the arrows of the enemy come your way, do I have a proclivity to go immediately to the Lord? Or is my proclivity to pick up the phone or walk into a staff member's office? Then can I stay mentally present in meetings? Yeah, I want you to minimize meetings. I want meetings to have an agenda. I want them to be as long as they need to be, but absolutely no longer. But can I stay present during that time? Can I have pastoral conversations whether it's premarital counseling or salvation encounters, instead of looking over at my devices or listening for interruptions or my mind wandering. Do I have these priorities defined, whether it's for the next year, for the next quarter, for the next 5 years? These are my strategic priorities. These are the things that I do. And then one, can I resist the temptation to chase what I call shiny things, which is, you know, the latest little ministry trend, the latest little ministry idea, the latest bit of gossip? Sit down to open your Bible app. And by the way, I've had to change my engagement with some Bible software and Bible apps because they too have become cluttered. And you go to open it up and you get 15 different things popping up and you get the news of the day and you get the latest gossip and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, do I get caught up in that? Do I go down these rabbit holes? And the thing I was going to do, I'm now too distracted to do. So, you know, going back to even old school things like concordances. Remember those? Remember those? So you got to do whatever it takes to strengthen this muscle of attention, of focus. You can make it a game. Yeah, make it a game. 10 minutes. Can I just pray for 10 minutes? How about 30 minutes? How about a retreat? Can I work in 90-minute blocks? When can I find 2 to 3 uninterrupted hours? Easy for me to say. When can I find 2 to 3 uninterrupted hours? It's not bragging. It was just simply survival that most of my books were written and are still being written between 4:30 and 7:30 a.m. Believe it. It's not because I like to get up that early. It's not because I wake up and say, good morning, Lord, let's get started writing. Instead, I say, oh, good Lord, it's morning. What am I thinking on this? But I write because I have to get the ideas out. I write as a passion. And I have a pretty good plan. I'm a pretty fast writer. May not be a good one. I've got editors. But that's about the only time I could find. For years, I went in the office. Drug my butt in that office, 7:15, you know, dark, cold days in New York. Hard to get a taxi that early. You know, if I'm not going to walk. If it's 7 o'clock, I rewarded myself with a $7 taxi on the days that I could. And I could get more work done from 7:15 to about 8:45 before the staff got there than I might get done the rest of the day, at least when it came to the priorities. Because the rest of the day was helping them with their priorities. And that squeezed a little bit more in here or there. But I mean, the point is you got to do what you got to do to find time for strategic thinking, for vision work, for long-term planning. And when it comes to those things, I'll say them again, strategic thinking, vision work, long-term planning, they can't be interrupted by impromptu meetings. They have to be device-free. It's you and the Lord and maybe one or two team members that are all committed to working on it. We'll call that what they call it in some of these books, executive time. Or maybe sometimes the word I use, you know, balcony time. Where you're not just working in your church, but you're working on your church. And then I have to say before we go, you have to learn to operate in a device-free presence. You know, the notifications have to be turned off. The apps have to be removed. The distractions and the volume and the vibration must be set to do not disturb. Now, I've recently had a change of heart about some of these things with devices. I've decided that you cannot live without the devices. I need the devices. Most of you know, over the last few years, I've given away over 10,000 books. And I've moved to almost exclusively digital reading. But it took me about 2 years to get the digital reading platform that I wanted. Because what I loved about a book is it was the last place where I didn't have to worry about seeing an advertisement. But then you go to ebooks, and a lot of your ebook readers and all of that, as soon as you pop it open, it doesn't go straight to the book. It takes you to the related books, and I'm getting advertisements there. But I've learned, I've adapted, I've found ways, I've found programs, I've found ways to set this up so that I can have undivided time while using the device. And it may be, having a set browser that's this way, or it may mean having a different screen, or it may mean having even two phones, a work phone and a family phone, or whatever. I'm not suggesting any of that is right. And I'm not even saying I'm doing that. I'm just saying I considered all these options. And what I've learned is I can strengthen my muscles stronger than my devices. So instead of trying to tame my devices, I just tried to strengthen myself. So I don't have the apps. I don't have the notifications. I have a set time. And that's the only time I look at my messages. It's the only time I open. No little numbers, no little pop-ups, no little vibrations. And then there's a way you can set it so that if it's an emergency, it gets through. But you've got to work at it. So there is a way to do it. So when I say device-free presence, I don't mean that you're not using your laptop, you're not using your tablet, or you're not using your phone. These really are necessary to do the work that we do. But you're able to use them in a way where they're not interrupting you back by dinging and chiming and notifying and all of that. So it's been a bit of a shift, and I'm still not where I want to be, but I'm far better. So that I use it as a tool. So I pick up the hammer when I need it, but I put it away when I don't need it. I pick up the phone when I need it. I am not distracted by it when I don't need it. When I pick it up, I use it for what it's for,